How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Open Floor. I'm John Gonzalez, joined by SI's own Rohan Nadkarni. Ro, basketball is in full swing, my friend.
It is. Listen, we got big wins from India and the Miami Dolphins this weekend. Basketball's back. Like, that's my – people are talking about their own sports equinox, you know, oh, all four sports. A lot of people leaving out the T20 Cricket World Cup. I'm personally not.
Who would do that?
Exactly. Very exciting sports weekend for me, to say the least.
Yeah, we have a lot of cricket talk coming up, as well as this is now a Phillies podcast. So shouts to the Philadelphia Phillies for making the World Series. But we have a ton of basketball to get to. We will get into the surprising Utah Jazz, the not so pleasantly surprising Lakers Heat. And I'm not even going to mention the other team right now. We'll talk a little Cavs.
Phillies are the one team that can make me root for the Astros, by the way. I just want you to know that.
I'm aware of this. It's very strange that Philadelphia is in the protagonist role. Normally we play the heel. This time around we get to play the face. But it should be exciting. I'm thrilled for that whole scenario. But we have to get into Adam Silver making some very interesting comments, Ro. He had an address to the NBA writ large, but mostly to the Suns, in the Suns arena, about a bunch of things, including he's not so thrilled about tanking. He realizes that a lot of teams out there want to get Victor Wembanyama, the French freak. He's 7'4". He was standing next to Rudy Gobert in one picture, made Rudy somehow look small. To a lesser extent, I think some teams are also probably really excited about Scoot Henderson. But obviously, Wembanyama is the main guy coming up in this draft. And the commissioner called it a serious issue for tanking. Said he's had hundreds of meetings, Ro, about this. And he said, we put teams on notice. We're going to be paying particular attention to the issue this year. And he said that he's thought about relegation, which I thought was interesting. And I'll get into his specific comments there as well. But what do you think about the commissioner wrapping the league on the knuckles for potentially tanking for Victor?
It's interesting. First of all, it's funny to me that, as you mentioned, you know, he was speaking to Suns employees on behalf of the league, apologized to Suns employees for having to work for Robert Sarver, basically. I thought it was a little funny that I guess employees, it was an open Q&A, and eventually they got around to asking him about tanking. Even Suns employees, I guess, have similar questions as we do. You know, it's been a pet issue for him, I guess, as much as it's been an issue for any commissioner. I don't remember David Stern talking about tanking as much as Adam Silver has. At least David Stern later in his tenure, as much as Adam Silver has the last few years. Of course, they flattened the lottery odds recently. So now the top four teams, there's no one team that has some runaway chance at the number one pick. It's like four teams with a 14% chance. To me, my issue is the league trying to, at least he's acknowledged the reality of it, but the league trying to pretend like there's anything they can do about it is a little silly to me. Unless they're willing to take drastic measures. And frankly, I don't even know that relegation is the realistic one. Like, there are measures for them to take that would maybe be easier to pull off than relegation. That, to me, that it was strange that he threw that out there. I don't even know how that's even remotely possible.
He loves like all things European soccer format. You know, the midseason tournament has been a bugaboo for him for quite some time. He says he thought about relegation, but he called it destabilizing. He said it would disrupt our business model. And even if you took two teams up from the G League, this is a quote from him, they wouldn't be equipped to compete in the NBA. He's right about that. The other problem is, you know, on its face, and I want to like unpack relegation a little bit here, but on its face, it wouldn't work the way the G League is currently comprised, because the teams that are in the G League are controlled by NBA teams and they're shuttling players back and forth. Mm-hmm. So like, how are you going? Like, if you, let's just say theoretically you dropped the Knicks, right? And you graduate the Knicks G League team. Like, that's part of their team, right? Like, they control those guys. So it wouldn't work. They'd have to figure out a way to make those G League teams independent. And then, like, how do you graduate those players if you're, you know, shuttling them back and forth? So it wouldn't work as it's currently comprised. But let's just fantasize here for a moment. Let's say you could make the G League teams independent. Do you like the idea of relegation? This is something that Isaac Lee and I, former SI Weekly producer, Isaac Lee, former Heat Check producer, and I have talked about. He loves that idea. I kind of do too.
I don't like it for the NBA. I'm all for strengthening the regular season of sports. I think it's a joke that the Phillies are in the World Series, which should clearly be the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yo. You got to know your audience, son. Don't make me have Shelby cut your mic.
What American sports have done to the humble regular season is really sad. They keep diluting the product. I'm all for finding a way to get excitement and stakes back into the regular season. I just don't think let's play out this example. Let's say the Knicks team gets relegated. Mm-hmm. You know, are these teams going to be traveling to G League arenas for whatever the G League schedule is? How is it going to work revenue wise? There are just so many questions that pop up that make it, I think, frankly, impossible. Like, it's just, there are too many logistical hurdles, you know, like practice, like all these different things that this, you know, are players going to get paid the same if they're playing a G League schedule as opposed to an NBA schedule? What if, like, the Fort Wayne Mad Ants get promoted? Mm-hmm. And the league revenue takes a hit because they're making, you know, 1/30th of the money that the Knicks would during a regular season. Like, there's all kinds of considerations like that I think make it impossible. So not to be like the wet blanket and like, obviously we know it's a delicate situation, a complicated situation, and it's fun to talk about. But to me, it's so over the top impossible that it's not even... that I can't even wrap my mind around how it would work in the NBA to the point where I'm like, it's not worth it. There are better solutions.
It's not reality. It's not going to happen. It's still fun to think about. Clearly, mm-hmm. You hate fun. I'm famously pro fun. I like the idea of it. I mean, it works in the Premier League for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, the NBA is not the Premier League. But in terms of, like, just to address a couple of the points that you were worried about, I mean, money-wise, you know, there's a ton of money to go around, right? So some of those teams that get dropped end up with these parachute payments that it ends up as like a trampoline payment for the teams that get graduated to the upper league. So I think there's enough money to go around. The arena thing could be interesting, right? I mean, like, all of a sudden you've got like the Lakers playing in the Mad Ant Arena and it's like, 5,000 fans or whatever they hold. I mean, that could be interesting. But no, it's not going to happen. It's highly unlikely. I just like the idea of it theoretically, and it's just unfortunate that the way that the NBA is formatted, it's just, they could never pull it off. I want to go back to the tanking component, though. You mentioned that the odds have been flattened, which is an important point here. Because previously, the worst team got a 25% shot, right? 1 in 4. That kind of makes it worthwhile. Second shot was 19.9%, and third worst was 15.6%, all of which are better than the flat 14% that the worst three all have right now. Silver said he gets it, that it's a once-in-a-generation player in Wembanyama, but should teams be tanking? I mean, like, it feels like with a 14% chance that, you know, it's not a very good shot, and, like, you're throwing away your entire season. I'm not hugely in... I was... before, previously,
oh, very pro-tank. When it was the Sixers doing it, it was cool.
Extremely pro-tank. But now that the odds have been flattened, like, it really de-incentivizes it for me.
Not to me, because it's still like a level playing field. Like, what's the alternative? You know, you still are within the current setup of the system. If you finish in that bottom three, you're still giving yourself the best possible chance, even if that chance is worse than it was 10 years ago, you know? You might as well give yourself that chance than no chance at all or a worse one. To me, they have to start thinking of more creative solutions. And there've been some out there. There was the draft wheel that had some
that
ideas.
Nobody understands. You know? Nobody can explain except for Zach Lowe.
I was into the draft wheel. I didn't hate the draft wheel. You want to talk about fun?
Yeah.
Let's spin a literal wheel, baby, you know? There's, of course, getting rid of the draft, which I think is something that should be considered. You know, is there some kind of rookie pool that's bigger for certain teams, or teams can bank it, they can, you know, work on it for a few years? Is it
I didn't realize that you were such a staunch capitalist. Like well, a free market capitalist where everybody controls their own destiny, which on its face I like the idea of, but like,
I'm less of a capitalist and more pro labor, Jonathan. That's how I like to look at
it. Okay, pro labor. I'm cool with that.
I think that our workers should get to choose where they want to work.
Well, and that, like, for 99.9% of industries out there, I'm 1,000% with you. But nobody's going to Memphis then. Nobody's going to Oklahoma City.
So that's why I think there needs to be, that has to work in tandem with some kind of salary cap rehaul, because I think the overhaul, mm-hmm. because I think the way to make it work is, you know, Oklahoma City doesn't have a high payroll, right? Like, we need to make a system so that a team like the Warriors that's paying a lot of money is never going to be in the mix for rookies, but a team that plans properly can somehow have saved up a lot of money to make it so that, like, if Wembanyama has to choose between $30 million from Oklahoma City and $6 million from the Warriors, you'd think he'd take $30 million. And that's the kind of situation the league should look into trying to create. How they go about creating it, you know, a lot of people smarter than me have, you know, thought about the economics of it, but I think there's a route to get there.
Yeah, I'm dubious on that, in the same way that I don't think that there's any shot of relegation. But I do want to get to something that looks like it will happen eventually, that Adam Silver also talked about, league expansion, which you and I have talked about on this program. He said that they're going to reevaluate it after the new TV contract, the current deal with ESPN and Turner, expires after the 24-25 season. He's worried that there's a potential of diluting the talent pool. I don't worry about that. I say expand. Vegas and Seattle, please.
I hate expansion. Come on.
You're out on expansion too. Again, famously anti-fun.
I'd rather have two less teams. I'm pro competition.
You want to contract.
I want to see the best players go at it. Like, get rid of two teams, add two roster spots to every team, and let's make every regular season game more exciting.
Okay. One, I like the idea of Vegas and Seattle as NBA markets. That would be really great. But fair.
I would love to see basketball in those two cities.
But forget about the expansion part, because now you've intrigued me. Delete two teams from the NBA and crush the hopes of some listeners right now. Go ahead. You're pro contraction. Which teams are you getting rid of? Yeah. You like the NBA too much. You don't want two teams to go away.
The players vote. The players vote on their two least favorite cities. That's how we decided.
I mean, in that scenario, Oklahoma City is not long for this world.
I just think that if Oklahoma City's only chance at competing is to draft someone and hope they stay there for 10 years and not leave after that first big extension. I had a lovely time in Oklahoma City. I've talked about it several times on this podcast. Shout out to Goro Ramen. Shout out to Gun Hezekiah. You know, lovely time in Oklahoma City. But if we're talking about how to get rid of tanking, that is part of the issue. There are certain cities that free agents don't want to sign in. And the league, frankly, bears responsibility for putting teams in those cities. Now, what are those cities? I think the players should identify them, not me. But
the players are not on this podcast. This was your idea.
And this is a continuation of my idea.
Listen, I'm putting you on the spot here. Let's go through these teams. I'm not letting this go. This is going to be a dog with a bone scenario here. All right. So you've already deleted Oklahoma City. I'm getting rid of them for you. I think that, you know, the Kings would have to be on that list, right? I mean, like, the longest playoff drought, and it's a city that has basically checked out on the team, even though they wanted the Kings to stay. They built a new arena, and then all of a sudden the Kings go in the tank. I love that the stat during the playoffs last year where no player currently in the NBA has faced the Kings in the playoffs. Just wild. So they'd be
up. That's nuts.
Memphis is too good, and they have John now, so you can't get rid of Memphis.
Memphis is great. People do sign there.
Orlando? Orlando would have to be in consideration. The Pistons have a young core and history, so you can't get rid of the Pistons.
Not get rid of the Pistons.
I think that those would, I mean, you'd have to consider Orlando and Sacramento for that second team that you're trying to get rid of.
Minnesota, possibly. Again, John, to me, it's, I'm not trying to just take myself off the spot, even though that's part of it. Mm. But if the NBA can identify through the Players Association, like these are the two cities where players have very little interest in ever signing, that's important information.
Yeah. I think that's fair. All right, I'll let you off the hook on this, and we can just all agree that the team that would be annexed and deleted would be the Boston Celtics. So they're
yes,
gone too.
Yes, agreed.
All
right. Yeah, get rid of the Celtics.
The last
yes.
thing that you mentioned as well that Adam Silver talked about at the Suns Arena was, and this was ostensibly the whole reason for him addressing the crowd, even though he ended up making some news with these other topics, was that he apologized on behalf of the league office to Suns employees several times for the Robert Sarver situation. Ro, all good now? Apology enough after two decades of workplace misconduct?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, on one hand, you know, I do commend him for going there, seemingly having a pretty open dialogue with these employees. You know, I think he acknowledged we knew Robert could be difficult, but we didn't know that he was crossing certain lines. I mean, I don't know how much I really believe that based on just what players have been saying recently. I don't think it's all good. I think it's a good first step. I'm not here to be like, you know, I don't want to continue to, maybe we should be piling on the league. I don't know. I guess that's up to the Suns employees, huh? Hopefully that this is not the last time they hear from the league if they feel like it's, you know, they need more, but it seems like a solid first step at least, but I'm sure for a lot of those employees who are dealing with a lot of things from the fallout of that situation, it's probably not enough quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, look, we talked about it extensively on this show and on Sports Illustrated Weekly. I don't think the way that they handled it was smart. I think that they fumbled their way through it. That press conference that he gave afterwards was a complete disaster, and they had a walk back.
You know, his quote, especially to our colleague Howard, about how,
yeah,
you know, he basically saying there are different standards was very bad. Was very bad.
Also honest.
Yes. There's also, like, to me, there was clearly some kind of plan at play. I don't think it's a coincidence that Sarver so quickly announced he was going to sell the team.
I think that he underestimated how much heat he was going to have, because all the initial reports were, this guy's going to stick it out and fight and come back in a year. And I think like the volume got turned way, way, way up after that Silver press conference. And I think Sarver went, oh, man, yeah, everybody hates me.
But I do think the NBA was happy to amplify those voices. I don't know if they literally had a hand in it, but to me, there was something more going on in that situation is kind of my feeling about it.
Well, I mean, yes, it was a start. I'm glad that Adam Silver apologized several times on behalf of the league. I still think that they didn't handle it great, but ultimately Sarver is on his way out, and that's a positive thing. All right, let's talk about some basketball. Let's talk about the biggest surprise in the NBA right now, the biggest pleasant surprise in the NBA right now. If you look at the top of the Western Conference as we record this on a Monday, the Utah Jazz. We were just talking about tanking. And we expected, Ro, that this would be one of the teams to do it. And I don't know what they're doing in Utah except for winning. And I don't know if this is like part of the plan, if Danny Ainge is like secretly a mad genius, or if they're winning in contravention of like what he wanted to do. But they have some like probably too many competent basketball players on this team. And they got past the Pelicans in a really fun game, and they're undefeated.
It's been hilarious. It started with them knocking out the Jazz in Utah, and you're like, okay, Denver's probably, you know, looking ahead to the game they have with the Warriors on Friday, and the next team that comes in here is probably just going to really stomp out the Jazz. They don't want to get caught in an embarrassing situation. They beat, of course, Rudy Gobert's old team, the Timberwolves. Then they beat kind of the upstart Pelicans. It's been incredible. It's been incredible. I think Lauri Markkanen has been fantastic. Yeah. You know, we talk so much about how the Cavs didn't trade anyone from their young core to get Donovan Mitchell, which is true. Markkanen was very good for them when he was healthy. He had 31-12. I'm looking at the box score against the Pelicans yesterday. He was fantastic. Jordan Clarkson, I don't think has a turnover yet this season. I need to check his. Okay, he finally had one, but his assist to turnover ratio is something crazy. He's been fantastic. Mike Conley's always been a solid vet. You know, they still have, like, Colin Sexton can play. Malik Beasley can play. Rudy Gay can play. Markkanen, Conley, Clarkson. You know, they don't have a star necessarily to orbit around, but all those guys can hoop. It's going to be interesting because I think this, regardless of whatever Adam Silver says, this is going to be an epic tank race. And even though the odds are flattened, you still want to be in the bottom three when all is said and done. Every win counts here. Every win counts here. You know, maybe they're really able to turn it around and take just a truly epic tank job, but they're handcuffed a little bit because I was texting with some of our colleagues yesterday. You know, I'm sure Danny Ainge is probably itching to make some trades, but they might be in a little bit of a holding pattern until December 15th when free agents who signed over the summer are able to be moved. That usually opens up movement for NBA teams a little bit more. Because as long as they keep, you know, Markkanen, Conley, Clarkson, it's going to be hard for them to really, really go in the tank. It's not like they're playing random rookies who we've never heard of. They're playing a lot of NBA vets.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm saying. They have too many competent basketball players.
But
Mike Conley, not dead yet. He's out there playing over 30 minutes every single night. Markkanen, as you mentioned, has looked really good. I am a little surprised that not only are they 3-0, but what do you think about Colin Sexton, like, not only coming off the bench, but like not getting a ton of run?
Yeah, look, 19 minutes. It's interesting. You thought that'd be the guy that they just kind of give the ball to and say, hey, Colin, like, go figure this out. Try to score as much as you can. We're going to try to maybe build up some scoring habits for you during this lean year. That's not been the case. I mean, Will Hardy, who came over from the Celtics, deserves a lot of credit. This is never a good position for a coach to be in early in their career. We saw it with Brett Brown, the number of years of losing he had to go through. It sucks, but he's getting the most out of that group. And he's unlocked the right combinations so far. So for whatever he's seen from the team in training camp, practices, etc., he's unlocked the right combination so far. The Markkanen thing is really interesting to me because if he keeps playing like this, what's the price going to be to trade for him? Will the Jazz even want to trade him? They may not want to, but the longer you keep him, you know, he's going to steal a win or two for you here. And that's dangerous. You know, can they afford to move him now? That's going to be really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm blown away by what the Jazz have done. And I think despite the loss, both of us are still pretty high on the Pelicans.
Can we just say how funny it is that they beat the Timberwolves? We were all rooting for that to happen. Come on,
of course.
That's funny.
Of course. Look, we like to be amused. It was amusing. Less amusing, let's talk about some teams that have not looked as good. And you're going to walk us through these. Let's start with your Heat. As we record this, the Heat they have a win. They're 1-2, but they have not looked great. And you are, there's a little concern on your end.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people have been unsure of how much weight to put on losing PJ Tucker and otherwise mostly standing pat for the Heat in the offseason. To me, what Tucker did, I think Tucker could play above his size better than most players in the NBA. And I think so far, the Heat, I just look at a team that lacks a lot of size on the perimeter. They're rebounding with Caleb Martin on the floor. Caleb Martin's been their new starting power forward, although he's suspended for a game tonight against the Raptors. We're recording this on a Monday. I just don't know that they have the same perimeter defense that they have had. You know, Kyle Lowry last year, I think, was the worst he's ever been in his career in terms of blow-by percentage, guys getting by him. So he's not keeping guys in front of him as much anymore. Tyler Herro's, I think, improved defensively. I think he's done a better job, but that doesn't mean he's an good or even average defender yet. You know, he's always going to have a size issue as well, guys getting by him.
Do you like him in the starting lineup?
It was an inevitability. I think it's got to be hard for someone like Max Strus, who is literally starting in the Eastern Conference Finals and I think is a better defender than Hero, has more length, and, you know, can also get some of those catch and shoot. I think that if – I don't know, because it another issue they're having is they don't have that scoring punch off the bench anymore. So now their bench lineups have a different configuration. Victor Oladipo's out. He was maybe going to be the guy spearheading the scoring on those units. They're not getting anything from Duncan Robinson. Dwayne Dedman was great for them last year as a backup center. I think one of the best in the league. He looks like he's taking a step back. They, you know, against Boston especially, you want to compare yourself against the best. I think Boston's one of the best teams in the conference. The Heat just look too small. And, you know, Boston's able to stay in front of everyone defensively, and they're getting by everyone. They're collapsing the Heat's defense. You just look at the three-point attempts in that game. Boston had way more, getting way more shots from the corners, etc. That's a good sign of the offense you're generating. Boston's able to generate way better offense. Those big perimeter guys are able to collapse the defense, get into the paint. Miami can't do that as successfully. And you talk about someone like Hero, you know, he started out really hot against Boston. My fear is still when teams switch everything against the Heat, and Boston has that capability when they really want to go to it. They were dropping a lot early in that game. I'm worried about that offense, the half-court offense. You know, one thing you hoped when Caleb Martin comes in for PJ Tucker, maybe the half-court offense gets a little better. You add some more athleticism. That hasn't been the case. So to me, their size, the offense is still plotting. Those are serious concerns.
A lot of concerns that you just enumerated.
Yeah.
But good news, could be worse. At least they're not the Lakers, which is a complete and utter disaster, continues to be. They dropped a game to the Trailblazers in just terrible, abject fashion that included Russell Westbrook doing Russell Westbrook stuff late in the game as the shot clock, still a ton of time in the shot clock, but the game was winding down. I forgot
he
how
tried
many
to
seconds.
Go for a 2-for-1
yeah.
when there was no, when they didn't need to because they were up one, and I believe Kurt Goldsberry tweeted out this stat that Russell Westbrook is the first player in the last four seasons to take a shot under 30 seconds to go with more than 15 seconds left on the shot clock and his team leading. He was the first person in the last 4 years to take a shot in that position.
Yeah, so that's what happened. He just jacked up a shot, and everybody went, like, even on the game broadcast, you could hear somebody saying, no, 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 Russ. Mm-hmm. And he was asked about it afterwards. He didn't have a good answer for it. So the Lakers fall to 0-3. We talked about this on last week's episode. I mean, yet another awful line against the Trailblazers for Russell Westbrook. He was 4-15, didn't hit a three-pointer, -4 in the game. And again, I'm not a big plus-minus single game guy, but I think that there is a little smoke and fire for him. He's still in the starting lineup. What are they doing?
You know, I was talking to a Lakers reporter not too long ago because I think when they moved Russ to the bench in that preseason game, it was a sign of things to come, right? They're going to move him to the bench. They're going, you know, they've sent out all these talking points that they're trying to get through the media. And then he's starting game one. I was talking to the Lakers reporter. I was like, why do you think they did that?
Yeah.
They were just like, I think everyone is just so nervous about how poorly Russ is going to handle it that, you know, it would somehow make the situation worse. You know, again, we don't want to beat a dead horse that is the Lakers. We talked about this last week where Woj said they might not trade Russ until after Thanksgiving, but it's just, it's bleak, dude.
It's
bleak.
Beyond that bleak. I mean, look, we all knew that they're like when in the preseason when they were like, this is what we're going to do with Russ. You know, we're going to bring him off the bench. And also, he's super down to set screens and like do all the stuff that he wasn't doing before. There was 0% chance that any of that was ever going to happen because we all know that Russell Westbrook would not allow it to happen. And if it did happen, he would not be happy about it, which would make matters worse. But it's a complete and utter disaster for them to have him in that lineup and have so much ownership of that team when he clearly like hasn't deserved it. I mean, it's a really, really bad situation for them.
Mm-hmm. I will say I kind of respect where LeBron was coming from. Last night he was asked about Russ's decision to, which was a perfectly legitimate question and a good question by the reporter who asked it, I believe it was Dave McMenamin, but LeBron was like, I feel like this is an interview set up to get me to say something about Russ. I'm not going to do it. I think it was a great question. And I, as a reporter, I can appreciate the answer. He didn't want to throw his teammate under the bus. So, but the fact that it's only three games into the season and we're getting into those situations is not good. Not really good for anyone involved.
Not good for the Lakers. That's another team that is scrambling to figure out what's going on. There's one more team that you basically insisted that we have to bring up. I did not want to discuss this team. I leave the floor to you.
The Philadelphia 76ers. Oh, boy. It's been an interesting first three games. They're now 0-3. You know, they started off tough with games against the Celtics and the Bucks. That's not easy. I get it. But there are some interesting things going on here as it relates to the Sixers. I want to pull up this stat Nekias Duncan tweeted out. I will say losing to the Spurs was not good, by the way.
Yeah.
Say started the season tough. Bucks Spurs. But
at home.
Not ideal. I thought this was a really illustrative stat from Nekias Duncan that he tweeted out. Last year, the distribution of touches. James Harden, 88.5 a game. Joel Embiid, 80.1 a game. This year, that's gone to James Harden, 101.3 touches per game. Joel Embiid, 71.7. So that's, you know, nearly 10 less touches a game for Embiid. Many more for Harden. 13 more. That, to me, and I said it, that's going to be a year-long challenge for Doc. How do you find the balance between these two guys? And that's kind of been the issue, finding the right co-star for Embiid. And I've said it before on this podcast. To me, he's not a typical superstar because of how much of a matchup problem he is and the fact that he does play back to the basket in the post. I don't like the idea of a ball dominant guy next to him. That's why I loved like the Bradley Beal fit. If you got like the best version of Bradley Beal, he is a shooter who can run off handoffs and space the floor. I just think we're seeing a better version of Harden, but it's like that Wario meme. It's like, I've won, but at what cost? It's like Harden looks great, but at what cost? Because if the cost is, Embiid not getting enough touches, I think that's a serious problem. Then you also get into his conditionings affecting his defense. He's in a way deeper drop on these pick and rolls. That's hurting their defense.
I think you're giving Embiid a little bit of an excuse here because he hasn't looked good. He hasn't played well.
Yeah.
The vibes have been awful. I mean, I don't know if you've watched these games, but he's checked out and his body language is really bad. And he also revealed after that Spurs loss that he didn't do anything for 2 months in the run-up to camp because he was dealing with plantar fasciitis, which there's always something with him.
Right, and it's tough because I don't want to sit here and be like, you know, people can go through every single one of his injuries and be like, this one was a fluke, but to, like you said, like he looks, I'm not trying to give him a pass because the conditioning's not there. He's not, when people talk about why he should have won MVP last year, a big part of it was how great is his defense is and the impact he has as a defender, which is all true when he's healthy. But when that's not there, he had such a poor shooting game against the Bucks. Those mid-range shots weren't going. Like, it's an issue. It's absolutely an issue.
I'm going to read you a quote here and then we'll move on. This is from one Doc Rivers after the Spurs game. We're not ready yet. Honestly, we're just not. We're not ready to win yet. You can feel that. We got a lot of work to do. Well, no kidding. Yes, you have a lot of work to do. We're not ready to win yet. Take your time. But also, who's in charge of the win department?
Yeah. Who's in charge of the helping you get ready to win? Typically, that is the head coach. You know, there was the report that PJ Tucker was yelling at everyone in the locker room that they're not going to be given a win. They have to earn it. You know, they're getting the Pacers. We're recording this on Monday. They're getting the Pacers tonight. That's a great chance to get in the win column. I'm going to be very surprised. If they lose to the Pacers tonight after an 0-3 start at home, it's full-on panic mode. it's like Doc Rivers, there's going to be a report. Someone's going to either have to give him a vote of confidence or like there's going to have to be something, because 0-4, it would just be pretty pathetic to start the season that way.
How many do you think they'd have to drop to start the season before Daryl Morey's like, all right, Doc's got to go? Like, what's the number?
I think 0-7, you're out. 0-7, you're out. Yeah.
Well,
you can't. But yeah, man, it's not been great. It's not been great.
No, it hasn't. So that has been your annual or weekly Philadelphia 76ers report. And again, I want to point out, didn't want to do it. Ro's idea. So send all your emails to Ro.
I wanted to make sure I kicked the city while they were down, in anticipation of whatever happens.
That's the thing, though, bud.
With this world,
the city's not down, and that's that is yet another reason why this is coming. Like, if it's gonna happen for the Sixers, where they're scuffling and they're not playing well, this is the perfect time for them, because you have no idea how much air cover the Phillies and Eagles are giving them. If this was happening in a normal year when the Eagles weren't good and the Phillies weren't going to the World Series, people would be losing their minds right now. But nobody cares, because everybody's on such a high. I don't know if you saw, like, people were climbing light poles and setting off fireworks in the middle of Broad Street. So nobody cares about the Sixers right now. All right, moving on. You went up to San Francisco to see the Denver Nuggets. Didn't look great in that first game. Looked much better against the Warriors. You tell me how they looked. Jamal Murray was out there. I want to get into KCP. What was your takeaway from the Nuggets?
Well, first of all, I was there, and I encourage everyone to stay tuned, because I'm writing a feature about the Nuggets that's coming out this week that I'm really excited about. I was really, really impressed with the Nuggets in that Warriors game. I know the Warriors came back. Listen, the Warriors are going to come back on a lot of teams. Like, I'm tired of this idea, like, no lead is safe in the NBA at this point. Like, if you go up 20 in the first half, I don't care. I expect the other team to make it close. That's just the number of threes being put up, etc. Pina and I have talked about this, but, you know, people need to reconsider what they think is a big lead in the NBA. So I'm not super concerned that the Nuggets let the Warriors come back on them. There were a couple fluky things that happened at the end of that game. And also, the Warriors have, like, the greatest shooter of all time. They come back on people. But for them to hold on, you know, Jamal Murray has looked all right. You know, Jokic has made a lot of jokes. He was like, he didn't suck tonight. Yeah. He didn't play in that Warriors game. I think that it's going to take some time for Jamal Murray. And I think that they are in a position, as you mentioned, to let him ease into it. Michael Porter Jr. has looked great shooting-wise. But I'm really, really excited to see how quickly the additions of guys like Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope have made a difference for this team. KCP has been an absolute sniper from deep.
I want to stop you there. I want to stop you there. KCP, in the last game, 13 field goal attempts. Only MPJ had more. He took 10 from three, which was the same as Michael Porter Jr. That is a lot of work. I like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope fine, but that is a ton of work from him. Is that sustainable, number one, and is that a winning formula, number two, for the Nuggets overall, if you got to rely that heavily on KCP?
Well, the reason I think why this is a winning formula for the Nuggets is Jokic does not want to lead the team in field goal attempts. That's not the way he wants to play. He doesn't want to score. He did it out of necessity last year. I think it was Mike Singer who posted a clip. You know, Jokic has so much attention from the defense. There's one play I can't remember now if it was the Warriors against the Thunder. Jokic is just like running across the lane, like he's coming from the left wing, running across the lane to the right block. Two defenders go with him, and it's a wide open three for Caldwell Pope at the top of the key. Wide open. I mean, you know, I think KCP said during training camp, he's like, I know what they brought me here for, and I'm going to do my role 110%. It's to be 3-and-D. It's a good sign for their offense if those guys are taking a ton of threes. Last year, Denver was a terrible three-point shooting team, which hurt, because the beauty of Jokic is the open shots that he generates for his teammates. And so I think for me, those are good numbers. You want the wing guys taking way more shots than they did last year, because their shooting is going to be so much better between Pope, MPJ. Bruce Brown was a 40% three-point shooter last year. Those were wide-open attempts. Can he sustain that? I don't know. But if he's average or above average from there, it's going to make a big difference. So to me, John, it's actually a good sign. It's a good sign, because I think what Brown and KCP have done on both ends of the floor, that's what the team envisioned, is we want to take the burden off of Jokic and amplify what he does best, why he won MVP, he makes the guys around him better.
Yeah, I mean, yes to all of the things you said about Jokic. I'm a little bit more skeptical than you are about whether or not like it's a smart idea and sustainable and a winning formula to be like, you know what? Our main guy, KCP, on the outside, just jacking shots, and it's going to be the Nuggets are back.
Like I said, I think it'll be a work in progress, and they'll find the balance. You know, one thing they haven't done a lot yet, we haven't seen a ton of Murray Joker pick and rolls, the inverted one with Murray screening. So I think they're easing their way into it. You know, the game is going to dictate it. I think, you know, part of the reason why on the League Pass rankings I put the Nuggets so high is they just have a great offensive team. They have a really great offensive team, and they have a lot of options on a given night. So I don't know that the formula is necessarily KCP lead the team in shots. It's we're going to find the open shooters, and we trust the guys that we have on our team to shoot. And I think that's actually, you know, we've seen a team like the Clippers last year when they didn't have their stars do that to a level of success. When you have good enough shooters, I think it's a sound strategy to keep finding the open guy. And I think it's been more that than, you know, it's not like they're feeding KCP and having him run pick and rolls and, you know, ISOs or whatever, but the ball is going to find the open guy in that offense.
You famously fond of KCP quite clearly, and that trend continues. Let's move on.
So I interviewed KCP last week.
Okay.
And I fortunately was not in a situation, or it didn't happen where I had to, like, you know, someone introduced us. My entire life now, I've called him KCP because that's what everyone calls him. But then I'm meeting him for the first time and I'm like, do I call him Kentavious? Do I call him KCP? It feels weird to go straight to nickname. You know what I mean?
What'd you go with?
So someone was just like, hey, KCP, this is Rohan. I'm like, hey, Rohan, Sports Illustrated. And he's like, hey, how's it going? And then I went right into the interview, so it didn't come up. But all I could think about
be like, do you prefer KCP?
Prefer Kentavious or Kentavious?
You got to chat him up a little bit.
Yeah. Also, one time I was going to Vancouver with my friends, and my friend called Vancouver Vanquavious Caldwell Pope. And all I could think about was that joke.
Oh, you should have dropped that on him. Out of nowhere. Like, he would have definitely gotten the reference. All right, two more things, and then we'll wrap this up here. I wanted to note that Zach LaVine came back. He was dealing with a left knee injury. He started against the Cavs. He had a team-high 23 points in 28 minutes. Looked good, but the Bulls get blown out at home versus the Cavs.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, DeRozan goes nuclear in that first game against Miami, hitting all kinds of tough shots. The Bulls haven't looked quite as good since. It's definitely concerning to me that this early in the season – I mean, you see it with LaVine, see it with Victor Oladipo, guys who, you know, getting load managed this early in the season is not ideal. The Bulls are an interesting one. You know, that was a really impressive first win against Miami. I mentioned DeRozan. Any Heat defender who switched onto him, it seemed like he was hitting shots over them. Good defensive performance from them as well. I love that they have Caruso back. I think Caruso does so much for them. They're another team that's going to have to figure out the balance. You know, they were just so good last year when Lonzo was healthy, when they had all their main guys healthy. And, you know, they had a home-heavy schedule, and DeRozan, people are wondering how sustainable the performance was. But they're a concern for me because I think that, you mentioned the Cavs, and the Cavs are better. Donovan Mitchell had some great moments on Sunday. They played an OT game against the Wizards. They win that game. Donovan Mitchell is doing all the things down the stretch that Cleveland bought him in for. Chicago's now playing in a better Eastern Conference. They're going to need LaVine. I mean, it was great to see him out on the floor, but I think it's got to be a little bit of a concern that this early in the season they're already a little bit worried about putting too many minutes on his knee.
Yeah, that's not ideal for them. But I am glad that you brought up Donovan Mitchell, who, I mean, really looks like he's fit into his new home. He's had 30 or more in all three of the Cavs' first games. That looks like an awesome fit for him. I wonder about the offense because, you know, last year they ran that, like, really weird front court rotation that somehow worked out for them. And also Darius Garland emerged and was like, oh, this is my backcourt now because Sexton got hurt
And then Ricky Rubio got hurt, although Ricky Rubio had been like really good for them off the bench. I still am a little curious about how it's going to look with Donovan Mitchell and Garland when fully healthy. But so far for Mitchell, it looks fantastic.
Absolutely. You mentioned the 30 points. Mitchell's been really good. The reason I have some confidence in them together, you mentioned Garland. He got poked in the eye. What a like annoying like first game injury. Yeah. You get poked in the eye. Now you miss a couple games. But the reason I like it together is because they can both shoot. Garland is played off the ball for a lot of his time in Cleveland. I mean, they played with Ricky Rubio, who's back on the team. He was used to playing off the ball, playing with the point guard, a ball handler, etc. Mitchell, to an extent, if you remember, the reason why the Jazz went out and brought in someone like Mike Conley was to alleviate some of the ball handling duties for Donovan Mitchell, so he didn't have to bring the ball up every single play. So they both have a little bit of a history there of being in a similar situation. And then for Garland especially, you know, I'm not the first person to point this out, but if you remember kind of the play-in games down the stretch against the Nets, down the stretch against Atlanta, it just felt like he had to have the ball in his hands and there were no other options, and he didn't really exactly seem to relish that. I don't think that's the way he wants to play. I don't think he wants to run every single high pick and roll. And I think that if you just think about that situation, that game, if they had had Donovan Mitchell those nights, how different those games could have been, how much easier Garland's life would have been. He's not a Trae Young type player. He's not someone who wants to have this ridiculously high usage, pound the ball, etc. So I think I'm still really confident about them finding a way to make it work.
It's fun. I mean, it's fun to watch. We'll see how it works out, like in terms of the win-loss record, but it's definitely fun. And I'm sure that Donovan Mitchell greatly prefers this than, you know, whatever the last few years of the Jazz didn't yield. So at least he's got a shot here.
Did you see real quick that he said on the Reddick podcast that him and Gobert both wanted one more run in Utah, which is kind of shocking to me. And I have no reason to believe he's like making it up. Although, you know, that was a surprise to me that he said he told Reddick that.
I'm not sure I don't think he's making it up, but I wonder how much his heart would have really been into one last run, because we saw what that team was. I mean, like, that team had a ceiling and it kept butting up against it every single season. So at some point you got to go, yeah, this is not going to work, and we might as well go our separate ways.
For sure. Also, like, I wonder how quickly, even if you felt that way, that would have changed, like, just 6 games into the regular season.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Well, I'm quite confident that he'll be just fine in Cleveland and enjoying that situation. But there's a ton of basketball this week, so enjoy it, everybody. Rohan will be back on Friday with another episode of Open Floor. In the interim, thanks so much for listening. Bye.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.